Well, apparently you're still here. You're still hanging out, so that's a good thing.
That's great.
You know, it is good stuff.
You know what's even better?
What?
Our Facebook page and website.
Wow. If that's not smooth, I have no idea. I was trying to give her a setup line and it worked. Don, what else are you going to find us?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Who needs Eric anymore?
Right.
We've got it.
Yeah.
I'm here to set it up, man. I'm just setting the plate for you. I'm the straight guy. I just, you know, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
So Don and I were talking in the break, about going fishing and where you can and where you can't venture. In the last week, it has been imposed by the Coast Guard on the Mississippi River. I believe it was pools 2 and 3. 4 was open for recreational traffic, and 5 through 12 were closed. So the only section on the river in this area proper was pool 4.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that happen before?
I know I've seen it up in Stillwater, where there's a significant erosion, but not that I remember being down here.
Well, I think the reason is not erosion. I think it's obstacles.
Well, I mean, part of it, but in Stillwater's case,
that's what was
there's a significant part of it as well.
That would be the St. Croix, though.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the river stretch itself, yeah. I was heading down on Friday. I brought it to you before the show, and I said, there's a root ball and a big tree, and it was probably 50 feet long heading, you know,
down
to
river.
The Gulf of Mexico.
You wonder where they end up. How do they get through the dams?
The rollers.
They'll go over the rollers?
Well, you got to remember, right now, there are no rollers.
Right.
They're all the way up, and there's no more than about 2.5 feet, I'd say. So if you're not familiar with in the dam facility, there's two sections. One is going to be the lock section, where the boats can, barges and recreational traffic can lock through. So one door opens up, lets water in. If you're going downstream, they shut the door, they drain the water out, and you go to the lower level and head down to the river. On the other side of this is a segment of probably 50 feet of metal that's on a slide, and it's called a roller dam because it actually, the water kind of rolls around it and slows the flow, but it reduces the flow of water out from the upper pool. And they pull them up in conditions like this and let the water go. And right now, they're only sticking up fully retracted about 2 feet, maybe.
How do those trees get underneath them?
I think they roll around until they find a way to get underneath.
Yeah. I mean, even if you go look in our community, you can see these trees are stuck in all over the place and docks and...
Oh, yeah.
And...
They're just shifting. They're just shifting their location until the water recedes. Then it remains in that for till the next flood.
So yeah, even in pool 4, that's still open for recreation. You got to be careful.
Oh, it's horrible
because some of these can be.
They're neutrally buoyant, is what it is. Done.
Just underneath the surface.
They've been.
Give it a couple weeks and it'll flush itself out. And
yeah, but they've been on shore. They find themselves floating downriver, and when that happens. Then it becomes a scenario where you really can be in trouble. I know one of the tournaments here, one of the guys was going in spring, and it was tournament day. He came around up one of the back channels in the Wisconsin Channel, made a right turn, was coming around, make a left turn, hit a tree. It threw them both out of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And Rich Mealy fished on the tour for many years and threw them both out of the boat. They were okay. Kill switch was on.
Good
was
thing.
An important thing, but yeah, not a good thing at all. Nope. And I think even in lakes, the amount of water in the lakes is causing that same kind of thing to happen. And whether you're on a lake or a river, it's not going to be much. It's not much different.
Now, I don't know if that's over the total Midwest, but it is in our part of the world anyway.
Wisconsin. Minnesota,
yeah.
I believe Michigan's getting it as well because it comes right through where we are at on the port in the Port Washington area, and it's going right straight across, and it's flooding everywhere.
Yeah,
high water, high water, high water. So, not Not my idea of a
it's not
nice
a normal
thing. No, it's also it's dangerous, just plain dangerous, especially people on their own lake. They're not very
Let's talk about your deer camp.
You want to talk deer camp? You ready to jump into that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been to deer camp. You have any deer camp stories, Don?
Nope.
Wow.
I don't. I've been very fortunate because I hunt locally and I go out and usually just have to shoot the deer.
Here we go. Well, and so when we refer to a deer camp, there's a lot of things it could be. It could be you have somebody that invites you to go hunt with them, right?
Right.
It could be somewhere where you sign up to be a club member of a deer camp, because yep. they have those as well. Right. So there's a lot of different things that could encompass a deer camp, quote unquote. That's air quotes, right?
Right. I think it'd be great fun.
So if you've never been a club member, these warning signs may not seem so apparent as the story goes. And since you'll be spending a significant amount on yearly dues in some of these places, if you go to them and pay,
right?
It's important to understand what you're signing up for. So first one, quick turnover. Invitations aren't always a bad thing. If someone asks you to join their camp or lease, it's probably an indication that your friend, coworker, in-law, etc., thinks you're a good fit and hunter for their camp. So inviting somebody, you ever invited somebody to a group you've gone hunting with?
No, but fishing. Yeah, no, I have hunting.
You know what
too.
I mean?
Yes.
What's the challenge?
Well, I mean, the challenge is that person's skills and ability once you hit the field.
Okay, so it's in the field, and then what else is it?
Their willingness to chip in to cover the cost of everything?
Well, not only that, but also at the camp, if you're willing to help clean up, fix food, do all those things that they just jump in and they don't have to ask.
Yep.
It's like, hey, let me help you with this, right?
Yep.
Those are key pieces to any hunting camp, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a pay or otherwise, in this case, it's... But in the field, you've been hunting with us
yep.
at the lodge.
Yeah.
What's a concern you have when you hunt with somebody you don't know?
They know what they're doing.
They're not going to do something stupid.
Right.
That's my concern.
Yes.
That's always my concern. So a big piece of the
biggest
puzzle.
Fear you have, or I had when I had my German short hair,
mm-hmm.
was somebody who wanted to ground and pound.
Yeah.
And that's a no-no.
Yeah. You got to see sky between your barrel and the horizon.
So your barrel's above the horizon.
Yeah. So anyway, point is, if somebody invites you, then that's good. They think you're a good fit.
Yep.
However, some invitations come from desperation. For example, a camper lease, it's like a revolving door. No one stays for more than a year. Private land isn't cheap and isn't getting any cheaper, but good hunting camps, regardless of the price, don't have issues finding members. If there's good hunting, someone will be there.
Right.
Turnover in hunting camp isn't necessarily an indictment for the members either. It could be the lease situation, location, if camp borders and other camps or hunting grounds, etc. But for instance, some leases allow you to make some habitat alterations and plant food. Others do not. So understand there's a lot of different elements that come into play and what is involved to keep, or maybe somebody is not there anymore that you may not get the whole story. Number two, no does. The practice is probably more from the fear of the days of low deer numbers, but it's still something you see from time to time. Misconception that more does equals more bucks still pervades some deer camps. Unless you live in a deer desert, shooting does is a must if you want bigger bucks and not to exceed an area's carrying capacity. That doesn't mean you have to shoot your state's bag limit, but the shooting any does is not a bad news thing. Not to mention, filling the freezer becomes exponentially harder when you take does out of the equation. Also, if you have kids that hunt, do you really want to tell them that they're only allowed to shoot legal bucks?
No.
Exactly. Ava, you agree with that.
Right. The first two deer I ever shot were does.
And what did it mean for you?
It was wonderful.
But what did it mean in your world? When you had that first opportunity to shoot a deer, What were your thoughts?
I don't know. I almost blacked out. I was so... You know what I mean, though?
I'm glad I asked.
That's called dough fever.
Yeah.
Well...
She got the fever.
Ball blacked out.
Hey, I did.
Damn, you passed out.
Yeah. What? I almost passed out.
Wow, I didn't expect that, Don.
No, I didn't either.
No, that's exciting, what you, you know, I thought I knew what the answer would be, and it was not at all.
I was going to black
out. She'd
be
fun to take on. I wonder if she screamed.
Oh, my gosh. No, but I did feel bad because I had to shoot the thing three times. So that might be why I blacked it out.
She's just reliving it. She's like, listen, Fanny's face.
The poor thing, though.
Okay. Really, all right. Okay, well, we don't have to go much more on that now.
No, yeah, so move on to the next one.
So, but I guess the point is, when you have kids that go out for the first time, if they can get a deer, that literally will ingrain that hunt on them.
Oh, yes.
Locked or reserved stands. this story says, in high school, this guy dated a girl who came from a family of hunters. Her dad and brother were members of a camp near the house. Well, I never got an official invite that gauged my interest in the prospect of joining the camp. Modest-sized camp, proximity and price made it intriguing. However, the only one kicker was that every member was only allowed two stands, and they had to be placed before the season. Established members were granted the quote-unquote best spots, while new members were dealt the leftovers.
Right.
Suddenly, cheap yearly dues made sense. So that's another piece of it.
I relate that to no deer.
Well, or you know what? There are places that you're in the best spot. Did you know that? No. Yeah. But thank you for telling me. And then pinned spots only. Well, not all clubs are like it. Some very particular elements where you can actually hunt. For instance, some places allow you to only hunt designated stand locations. To be fair, sometimes it comes down to safety issues. Of course, if you have you know, a camp that's not far away, you have an open field that's not far from another particular house or whatever that might be. We've had that when we were pheasant hunting. It's like, okay, we need to line up here. Don't shoot this direction. That's, okay, viable.
Right.
Absolutely viable. However, if you're in a 3,000-acre camp and you only hunt spots at actual stands or food plots, you're overpaying for limited access is the issue. So analyze that. But not so much overpaying. If you're invited by friends, understand what things are and aren't allowed and what areas are you hunting based on what this area is and how many people. Because obviously some of those spots can be, okay, why am I doing this? Because this is I'm bottom of the barrel. I don't see anything there, any way I can come out of this.
This gravel pit just isn't drawing them in.
Can't figure out why. It's... Somebody planted a couple stalks of corn in the middle of it, but... and the final thing is never assume anything, especially when it comes to hunting. It's always best to ask. Anytime you have friends, get an understanding before you make a mistake. But because, you know, now is that time of year. People are starting to look. It's like, hey, I don't think I'm going to go this year, or I've got something that's going to be preventing me from doing that. So if you want to do that, get an understanding now. Take the time to get that hunting camp nailed down. Watch for the red flags. There's something that's a red flag for you when you ask the key questions. As they say, move along and understand successful deer camp and being able to get along with the people you're with. Hey, who is in the group with you? And I think, you know, that, I don't know. I think that's going to be probably one of the bigger
ask your questions in advance at best.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that's good.
Look for your story on the walleye lures.
We're going to jump on that one quick.
Walleye
best walleye lures of 2024. We're going to try and do this last week, but couldn't get at it. Now we are.
Okay.
So we're just going to dive right in, Don.
Do it.
So jigging, one of the top things that when I've done it on tour, the one year I jigged every single tournament and I ended up in the second for angler of the year. It was part of the mix on every event. And best overall, Northland Fishing Tackle Deep V Jig. Now, again, it doesn't really matter. I'm more of a Moon Eye Jig guy. Longer shank hook, I like that a lot. A little bit wider gap, important. But the other problem you have, too, is you get a longer shank with a wider gap. A lot of times you get flexibility in the hook it doesn't really give you a solid hook set, similar to a lot of floater jig heads that don't have a good strong wire hook on it. Exactly. Important is, if you're going to have bait, you want to be able to have long enough. If you want to do a double hook on a minnow, if you're going to be fishing minnow, and be aware, shorter hooks, sometimes you can get them just long enough to make sure that they keep the bait close to the head of the jig. So look for that. But again, casting jig, the deep V Northland jig. Best for trolling, Rapala Husky Jerk. Now, would you agree with that or not?
Oh, it's probably not been pulled behind my boat much.
It's a bigger bait. And the other thing to keep in mind, the Husky Jerk itself has deep dive. It has others. It has a lot of different elements to it. But shad wrap as a whole, you're going to find more people are going to be trolling it. The key there is, understand, shallow shad, number five floating shad, and then you've got the jointed number seven. Their difference, the five and seven jointed, they are not the same as a number five floater. They are more of a neutrally buoyant, and they provide a different action, and then we'll dive deeper. So a seven and a seven don't compare. So understand that, but that's also in there as one of the best for trolling. Berkeley Flicker Shad, I would say that's also a phenomenal bait, one of the top baits out there. Got to have that in the mix. It's got a rattle that's really quite good, and their colors are exceptional. So I would say that as well. Big deal there.
Berkeley's relatively new in the crankbait arena in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and did a nice job. So, yep. But, you know, and we're going to do one last one. We're going to save the other half for next week.
Okay.
But swim baits, and I want to, it's a good one to end on. Swim baits have taken over the walleye side of it in a big way. I've done them in a shallow over the top of the weeds. They've moved and challenged a lot of us normal anglers that would fish deeper water. The weed bite is a big thing. And using that, the Z-Man Diesel Minnow Z, amazing bait, easy to use, and you don't have to be an expert at it. Cast it out, slow retrieve, and you're going to find out just how effective it is for multiple species, bass, pike, and walleye. Mm-hmm. So really kind of a cool bait. But again, we're going to wrap up that show for today, and we're going to bring the rest of those to play next week. So for Don, Ava, and myself, I'm Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. We thank you guys for joining us. I hope you have a fantastic dry weekend. Bye-bye.